relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Hey, folks. Good to be back. And unfortunately, as the title of this show today implies, we are once again brinking our way toward World War III, and I'm not sure why. So because of that, I wanted to bring on someone who may be able to shed some light on this. David Goldman is the Spengler columnist for Asia Times and PJ Media and the president of Macro Strategy LLC and an all-around expert on the Pacific Rim and related locales. Now, I was a first group guy, so this is my area of operations as well. And I am 100% believer that we cannot allow Taiwan to be pushed around, and we can't allow the Chinese to tell us where Americans can and cannot go. But I am at a loss to figure out why right now Nancy Pelosi seemed to have a unilateral need to conduct foreign policy into Taiwan. Do you have any idea what she's actually up to?
Well, the charitable view is that Pelosi wants to show the flag and tell voters that the Democrats really aren't soft on Taiwan and on China, which, of course, the Republicans will attack the Biden administration for. The less charitable view is she's doing freelance diplomacy with the idea that we're going to show the flag and intimidate the Chinese and tell them that, you know, we're going to stand by Taiwan in a situation where we are not prepared militarily to defend it. So provocation from weakness is the opposite of peace through strength, which is what I believe in. And what she's doing, I think, is exceptionally dangerous and stupid. And the Biden administration owns that completely because she's going to be flying in on an American military aircraft.
So, and she essentially, by all appearances, undercuts Biden. Well, okay, she's Speaker of the House of Representatives. That's an important role, trade and other things. And speakers do this. They do, you know, conduct delegations, congressional delegations, go on shopping trips all around the world, you know, to go ahead and buy stuff. But why isn't she doing it now and not letting Biden run our foreign policy?
Well, it's totally possible that Biden thought he could test Chinese resolve by doing this indirectly. From the standpoint of diplomatic protocol, and the Chinese are very legalistic, constitutionally, Pelosi is second in line to the president. Now, we have a one-China policy. That's the foundation of U.S.-China diplomatic relations going back to 72, when Nixon went there. It says that Taiwan, the mainland of Taiwan, will work out what their status is, but it's still one country. Now, if the president went to Taiwan, that would be the equivalent of diplomatic recognition. If the vice president went to Taiwan, it would be recognition. So sending the speaker, who's next in line to the vice president in succession, according to the Constitution, is that close to playing with diplomatic recognition of a sovereign Taiwan, and that would be cause for war with China. Chinese will go to war over Taiwanese sovereignty. It's not just they hate democracy or they want to show how tough they are. It's a matter of the territorial integrity of a China, which has been chopped apart numerous times in the last couple of hundred years. We Americans have short memories. Chinese have vivid and long ones.
And they play a long game, and we play a 24-hour news cycle of strategy. I guess I have a strong belief that we should you know, do everything we can to convince the Chinese that they shouldn't do anything aggressive towards Taiwan, and that our policy can include aggressive deterrence. I don't think they've managed to pull that off with the, you know, inability of the White House to articulate this position. But what if, all right, now it appears she's going. You know, it sounds like that she'll be there Tuesday night, and the Chinese have literally threatened that if we fly military aircraft into there, they're going to do something about it. Are they blowing smoke, or could this actually blow up?
Well, I don't think they're going to shoot down an American military aircraft. But when Xi Jinping tells President Biden, as he did, if you play with fire, you will get burned, that is language stronger than the Chinese have used at any time since we established diplomatic relations. Not since the Korean War have they said things like that. Remember, Xi Jinping is facing a tough contest for his third term as premier. He's got the 20th Congress of the Communist Party coming up in November. And after he's put his credibility on the line, there's no way he can back down and do nothing. So what I would expect is not a kinetic action on China's part. I think more likely would be a blockade, and they dare the United States to try to break the blockade. That's not too easy when Taiwan's 90 miles off the Chinese coast and they have the home court advantage. As the Chinese keep saying, they've got, about 1,400 surface-to-ship missiles, and most experts, certainly the RAND people, the Air Force, believe that the Chinese can sink pretty much any American ship within, 500 miles or more of their coast. So that home court advantage is a massive thing. And whether we have the kinetics to face them down in a real crunch is really questionable.
I wish it wasn't, but unfortunately, you're right about that. Now, I think another lever they have is the ports and their ability to slow down, stuff coming out of Taiwan that we desperately need, like semiconductors. Is that another area that they could just put the screws to us, and just stop shipping containers and stop, ships from being able to transship through the ports they control, which is most of them?
Well, semiconductors as such, the chips are small and light enough that you could move them through air freight. You don't need to put them on ocean carriage. But they could interrupt a great deal, and they could also bring Taiwan to its knees. Remember, Taiwan has no domestic energy sources, and if the Chinese stop oil tankers from getting there at some fairly short time interval, their economy is going to shut down. So there are a lot of things they can do to put pressure on that. Chinese are inventive and nasty about things like that, so don't expect me to do their work for them and figure out what they're going to do. But I think they will do something that will hurt, and it will bring us that much closer to war, and a war that we have done a very poor job of preparing for.
And it's not like we didn't just, semi-dodge a bullet with the Ukraine situation. It doesn't look like that's going to blow up unless Putin seems to be in a losing position and backed into a corner. But do we really need to test the waters on that right now?
Well, Jim, I'm a peace through strength guy. The Chinese have hypervelocity glide vehicles, which are completely against which we have no defense at all. They have a massive amount of missiles on their coast. They have 1,000 interceptors. They have a home court advantage. We've done nothing in terms of ballistic missile defense, nothing to harden our satellites, nothing to try to stop these new weapons, which the Chinese are ahead of us in developing. So we're weak. And it's yet another pattern of weakness on the part of the Biden administration. They pushed Ukraine into a scrap with Putin, which we're not prepared to win. One more war that turns into a quagmire for both sides. The Russians aren't going to give up, and we're stuck with it.
Unfortunately,
so that's terrible planning.
Yeah, they seem to manage to make any of their bad decisions worse. We're talking with David Goldman, and after the break, we'll get a little broader view of how we can compete more effectively against the Chinese. This is Jim Hansen doing America First.
MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka.
America first.
Can you believe it? They are saying that they don't agree with America first. How do you say that?
Magnificent.
Hey, folks, Jim Hansen, and we are back doing America First. But the question that we're having to contemplate is America First on the global stage anymore? We're talking with David Goldman, Spengler columnist for The Asia Times. And David, I just want to contemplate the idea, since we have the Pelosi and Biden-inspired kerfluffle with the Chinese now, that God, hopefully, we don't have turn into more than a kerfluffle. But if it does, are we still preeminent as far as projection of military power? In this case, mostly aircraft carriers, fighter jets, missiles. It's not going to be a land war with the Chinese. But we're talking, that's always been the inconceivable notion, was that someone could sink a U.S. aircraft carrier. And isn't it horrendously dangerous if the Chinese were somehow to do that in our ability to project force and be a deterrent around the world, peace through strength?
Well, Jim, that's exactly the problem. We are by far the most powerful country in the world in military terms, without any doubt. But with a home court advantage off China's coast, China has put massive resources into anti-ship missiles, interceptors, and submarines, precisely in order to be able to kill an American fleet in proximity to their coast. Their land army is terrible. People's Liberation Army is maybe the worst land army in the world. But their missile corps is excellent. And the studies from the Air Force and the RAND Corporation and the Office of Net Assessment, which I used to do some work for at Pentagon, say that those missiles are extremely good. Now, you can argue about whether you can track a moving ship 800 miles off the coast. If it's maneuvering, can you really hit it? Well, the Ukrainians managed to sink the Russian flagship, the Moskva, 100 kilometers off their coast. And if the Ukrainians can do it, the Chinese, who after all did put a space landing craft on the dark side of the moon, probably could be able to do it. So the risk of a kinetic engagement against Chinese missiles and the possible loss of a carrier with 8,000 American sailors and all of our prestige, as you say, is not a risk that we want to take. The disgrace, in my view, is that we've done hardly anything to defend our military assets against Chinese missiles. We've been pretty much using the same systems we've had for years, and we're woefully undefended in that key area around the Chinese coast.
And that's exactly how that type of a fight would go. I mean, the problem we have is we would be as far away from our main bases as we could. There, as they would have, as you said, the home court advantage. But is it more an idea that they would be emboldened to try to push us in the hopes that we wouldn't retaliate? Could they actually consider the idea that the Biden administration would not, would try to stop if they conduct some kind of military provocation, shoot down one aircraft, fire one missile, do something to make a military attack on the U.S. Can they actually think the Biden administration might not retaliate?
Well, I don't think the Chinese are going to start the kinetics. A lot of things can happen by accident. The Navy guys will give you all kinds of scenarios. And my favorite one is from Admiral James Stavridis, who's a great sailor and patriot. Last year, he published a book called 2034. It's a thriller, but it's a very realistic one about how a war could start between the United States and China. It starts with a kinetic incident. Chinese sink a carrier. We nuke a Chinese city. They nuke some of our cities. We nuke some more. Finally, with tens of millions of dead, we've got a stalemate, and we negotiate. That's the real danger, that we stumble into this without intending to. There are many ways that could happen. I don't think either Biden or Xi Jinping wants a war or will start one intentionally, but there are plenty of ways it can happen without people wanting it to.
And we kind of stumbled. We watched a stumbling into a larger conflict in Ukraine. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people thought that Putin would just roll into Kiev and conduct some puppet operations, but that's now turned into a grinding thing. So is there, if we can avoid that, at least in China, then we're in a better position, right?
Well, absolutely. I think we should. I'm an America firster. I think we should be spending hundreds of billions of dollars on missile defense, directed energy weapons, which can shoot down, at least theoretically, these ultra-fast new missiles, protect the American homeland, protect their military assets. But our federal development budget, relative to the size of our economy, is a third of what it was under Ronald Reagan. We've let our development capacity for new military technologies atrophy. And that's the disgrace.
And that is something we're going to have to turn around if we're going to remain the preeminent military power and deterrent and keeper of peace around the globe. David Goldman, Spengler columnist for the Asia Times, on Smart Guy on Asia. Thanks for joining us.
America first.
Can you believe it? They are saying that they don't agree with America first. How do you say that?
Magnificent.
I don't know how you say not America first, but people do it. Well, listen, we have gotten to the part of this show I was waiting for, because I've told you guys before I'm working on an AI project to find out who was behind the censorship and disinformation of the Hunter Biden laptop story. And guess what? We have now on the show the woman who wrote the definitive tale of this laptop from hell, Miranda Devine. Good to be with you.
Hey, great to be with you too, Jim. I love your project, the sound of your project. Very important.
Well, it's one of the most horrendous things I think has been done as far as interfering in an election in this country, and I want to expose it, and I think everyone needs it exposed. But you did a lot of the hard work in digging into the story as a whole, and it seems to be, you know, there's a lot there, and I think there was always evidence of Biden family corruption. Given that we've now got some whistleblowers talking about what's going on in the FBI, do you think there will be any adverse action for anybody named Biden?
Well, look, I think that's all up in the air. Certainly, you know, if, as polls show, the Republicans take back at least the House, if not the Senate, I think next year they are all systems go. They are locked and loaded. They're doing a lot of work now, preliminary work, to get on top of all the issues. And the whistleblowers are starting to knock on their doors. That's what's really the latest kind of turn in this story, because which has had a lot of twists and turns since we first started working on it back in you know, late 2020, just before the election. And so I think that's good news, and I think it really will depend on patriots, particularly within the intelligence community and particularly the FBI, because what Senator Chuck Grassley has already managed to uncover, thanks to these whistleblowers, is what we were suspecting. But he's named names of an FBI agent and analyst, Tim Tebolt and Brian Orton, who he says basically buried the Hunter Biden laptop information, or he didn't say laptop, Hunter Biden derogatory information, but that was October 2020, that was it. Also in August 2020, when Chuck Grassley and Senator Ron Johnson, two Republicans, of course, were investigating, they did a fantastic report in September of 2020 into Hunter Biden corruption and Burisma, that Ukrainian energy company. And they also uncovered quite a bit of sort of financial shenanigans and basically the money trail via Treasury Department reports from China, Russia, Kazakhstan and other places into the coffers of the Biden family and their associates in America. So I think that information, they were getting very close to something that somebody in power didn't want them to have. And therefore, we had the FBI basically stage a phony FBI sort of defensive briefing for them. Now, whether the FBI, these agents were tricked by the Democrats, by Pelosi, Schumer, Schiff and co, who were at that stage screaming Russian disinformation and trying to disrupt the work that Johnson and Grassley were doing. Either way, they were given a defensive briefing, and Ron Johnson knew immediately that briefing started, and his staff knew that this was bogus, that the person that they were defensively briefing again wasn't even a part of their investigation. And they said to the FBI guys, if this leaks, we will know that something dirty is up. And sure enough, next day, it's in the papers. So that was an attempt to dirty up their inquiry into Hunter Biden. And that was with the assistance of the FBI. And then we find out that they didn't even just do that, but they're also burying information, about the laptop, presumably information from Tony Bobulinski, because he went to the FBI, had hours of being interviewed in October of 2020, and handed over all his documents, all the contents of his devices. And a lot of that material just overlaps and corroborates and duplicates a lot that's on the laptop that's incriminating, particularly about China. So so why they didn't do anything about those two bombshell pieces of information is a really open question. And
It's not a complicated question, but it does remain open. And after the break, we're going to dig into the reasons that they were hiding the Biden family corruption, which I think are a little obvious, but also what lengths they went to hide the story so that the corruption wouldn't sink Biden's campaign. We're talking with Miranda Devine. This is Jim Hansen. We're doing America First Radio. Back after the break.
Here's looking at you, Snowflake. America first.
America first, for sure, with some good cultural appropriation, Rage Against the Machine bumper music. Gotta love that. We're back talking to Miranda Devine, author of Laptop from Hell, which is now going to become a bigger and bigger problem for Joe Biden and for the left overall, because not just the problem they have with the Biden family business of selling out America so that Hunter can buy crack and hookers, but the problem they have now, Miranda, I think, is this is indicative of what the left has as a mode of operation to go ahead and influence a U.S. election. Because that information was coming out. You were working on it. Obviously, you mentioned the Chuck Grassley and Senator Johnson report. But all of that got stifled before the election. They tried to make sure that the American people wouldn't know just how bad Joe and Hunter and his brother and the rest of them were. And I think that is going to backfire for them almost as much as the corruption, because people understand corruption's a normal part of business and, okay, you know, you're riding your dad's coattails. But when all of that got shut down and it influenced the U.S. election, that's a different thing.
Yes. And look, I mean, I don't think you can just say, oh, corruption's nothing and people don't care about it. I think they care deeply, but they've just become so battered and bruised and cynical and resigned to the fact that it's endemic in Washington. But I don't think that means that any of us should give up It's a big problem, but it's a really corrosive problem. And, you know, it's across the Western world, but it's, I think, particularly bad in Washington, and it's on both sides. So I think that there's no point just sitting back and resigning yourself to it. You have to fight against it and remember how bad it is and how destructive it is to our national security, apart from, you know, trust in institutions, etc. But yeah, the media, the interference, the suppression of the story, the blackout by the media, the intervention by the intelligence services, by also former intelligence operatives like John Brennan, James Clapper, Leon Panetta, Michael Hayden, who wrote that letter with, you know, there were 51 in total former intelligence officials, some of them very high ranking, wrote that letter that Joe Biden used very successfully to get himself off the hook when our story came out, pretending that it was Russian disinformation, or, as they said in their letter, information. But they obviously, they want us to read that as Russian disinformation. That was how the letter was portrayed in the media, as they knew it would be. And their whole purpose for writing that letter was to get Joe Biden off the hook. The whole purpose of the FBI, as Chuck Grassley's whistleblowers are saying, was to suppress this story that was damaging to the candidate who was running against Donald Trump. And, you know, it was because basically the establishment, the swamp, whatever you call them, were determined that Donald Trump would not serve another term. So they didn't care. Joe Biden was going to win by hook or by crook.
Yeah, and they abused their power, the ones who were in government, obviously, and now at least we're seeing examples of malfeasance and potential criminal activity by FBI agents to do that. And then if you look at the disinformation campaign that was run against the American public by the media, by the tech tyrants who run the social media companies, and by Democrat operatives in collaboration, we believe, and I think our project, our AI project, is going to show some places where there was direct coordination. They were working together to influence the course of a U.S. election by conducting disinformation operations against the American people. And that's almost unprecedented. You know, that large a conspiracy to do that is I'm unable to find another example of. And we hope to be able to help the Grassleys and the Senator Johnsons and the other folks who will be holding hearings with that. And I trying to enlist you in that cause as well. So hopefully all your knowledge can be brought to bear on that as well.
Yeah, look, Jim, you're right. You can't overstate how important it was, the suppression of this story, the interference, really election interference there, and people have to be brought to account. We know from polls that were taken after the election that something like 17% of Biden voters in seven swing states would have switched their votes, would have not voted for Biden mm-hmm. if they'd known about the scandal of the laptop, and that would have been enough to swing the election. And, you know, now that the story, 19 months later, the New York Times and the Washington Post and so on acknowledged that, you know, our story was correct and that the laptop is real and they've authenticated a lot of the emails on it. Once they did that, they were obviously trying to get out in front of the Delaware grand jury, which at some point has to come to a conclusion and either indict Hunter or have some sort of cozy plea deal with him. But in that, now we're talking about more Americans know that the Hunter Biden laptop story is real, is important. And you know, polls are just showing how bad it is for Joe Biden that this story lingers on. And it's inexplicable why the White House keeps on stonewalling. You know, we have our reporter, Stephen Nelson, who's terrific. We have a couple of other reporters who are in that, in the White House press corps, who are occasionally allowed to ask questions. And whenever they ask about this, they just get the same old story. Yes, Joe Biden stands by his comment that he knew nothing about his son Hunter's overseas business dealings. It is impossible to maintain that fiction, and yet they still
Well, I think they're going to find that not just increasingly difficult, but impossible, because too much information's coming out and the whistleblowers are going to blow the lid off it. And I think come this fall and going forward, it's going to stop being a liability and it's going to be a death sentence for Joe Biden's presidency. Miranda Devine, tremendous to actually put together the definitive tome on this laptop from hell. And if you haven't read it, do, because it's got everything you need to know. And hopefully, Miranda, we'll be hearing more and new things out of the whistleblower hearings and the rest of it. But thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
This is Jim Hansen. We're going to be back with the final segment after the break and wrap up the Monday version of America First Radio.
Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
It is Jim Hansen sitting in for Dr. G doing America First Radio, and I am tickled pink to be talking to Julio Rosas, a former U.S. Marine, a town hall senior writer, but author of the book that I think sums up some of our problems here, Fiery But Mostly Peaceful, The 2020 Riots and the Gaslighting of America. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, Jim. But you said former U.S. Marine. There's no such thing.
Yeah, I thought it was ex. What are you guys? You guys are so testy about that, man. Marines, man.
Yeah, we're just
Marines. I used to always say when I was, because I was on Okinawa, first Special Forces groups on Okinawa, and so we had Marines. You couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a Marine. But I always said everyone should have a squad of them just when you need something broken. So we tried almost every deployment. We would bring Marines with us just because.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I'm sure they're
exactly
happy.
Exactly. I mean, they're Army Rangers and U.S. Marines are like equally good at breaking things, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But hey, look, your book, all right? Your book and what I kind of see as your beat is what I would describe as the lawlessness beat. Lawless from the side of the rioters, you know, and the violent protests and the fiery but mostly peaceful garbage. Lawless from the people who tried to pretend no laws were being broken. They're fiery but mostly peaceful. And then lawless from the side of law enforcement not enforcing the laws. Yep. If we don't have that, the country literally, that feeds on itself and we get what we have today.
No, it's definitely a ripple effect. And that's part of the reason why I wrote the book, because it's not only about my experience covering all these different riots in 2020 and the experiences of others who, you know, were impacted by it. But, you know, you look at the crime rates that we're seeing right now and, you know, it's egregious because, like, oftentimes it's being perpetrated by people who should be locked up but aren't. And because they, because of 2020 and because of what happened, our whole criminal justice system has been turned in on itself, where to now, you know, people... multiple convictions or multiple, you know, warrants out, they get let out because, well, that's the equitable thing to do. You know, that's the you know, the social justice.
You said the word. You said equitable. Equity is garbage. Equity is equality of outcome. It has nothing to do with equality of opportunity or anything. Equality of outcome is gaming the system so that all the results are the same, regardless of what people did to deserve them or not. And that's kind of what you're talking about there, is how do you take the fact that there is a disparity in the amount of arrests and the amount of people in prison based on color and other factors? Is it because of that or is it because of the crime? And when you throw equity in there, they're trying to fix it after the fact rather than at the root cause. Yeah. If there's more crime being committed by a particular segment of the population, then guess what? We should have more people from that segment of the population in jail. And then we should look at why that crime is happening. And I'll go along with we need to do a lot of work in the inner cities because they suck. They're under Democrat rule is why they suck.
Right.
But let's start there rather than trying to game the outcome.
Right, and that's the issue, because now what we're seeing is, you know, just like with the riots and like who that impacted the most, it was minority communities. The people who are being most impacted by this crime wave right now is also minorities, and, you know, more specifically, Black people and Hispanics. And so, when we look at what happened in 2020 to where we are today, I mean, we've completely lost the plot, and it's just, it's very disheartening, because I mean, I very recently was covering shootings in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend. And it was, I grew up from the Chicagoland area. I'm not from the city itself, but from the surrounding suburbs. And it's something I always heard about. But, you know, now it's like at the worst it's ever been in a very long time. And guess what? A lot of the people that I was talking to, you know, a lot of people I was talking to or the people who were impacted, it was black people and brown people. And then it just so happened I was in Chicago when then the Highland Park shooting happened. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that got all the coverage, and all the people back in Chicago on the south and west side were thinking,
like, that's just a weekend for us.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, where's that? We want attention like that too. And so, you know, obviously, you know, they deserve equal coverage. But that's the thing that's so twisted about where we were in 2020 to where we are today, is that more minorities are dying as a result of these, you know, equitable social justice type policies.
Defunding the police doesn't hurt rich white women drinking wine in the suburbs. And I think one of the things I've noticed that I find heartening is the change in Hispanic sentiment towards Republicans. You know, I mean, there has been a longstanding quality campaign by the left and the Democrats to demonize the right, as if because we oppose illegal immigration, we somehow hate brown people. And nothing could be further from the truth for most of the people I know. It's that we don't like illegal immigration. We like people who share our values, who are here legally. And you get a situation like that, and then that gets misconstrued. Then you take the riots. You take all the stuff that you covered. And as you said, who got affected? Whose businesses, right? Law-abiding, family-oriented, religious Hispanics who had quality businesses burned down by the dozens and hundreds and thousands in all of those cities. They lost everything.
Yeah.
You know, and those people looking at it like, okay, Democrats, what are you doing for me? You're killing me.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, as part of the book, I went back to places like Minneapolis and Kenosha, and it was really kind of just heartbreaking to see just how, you know, months later, they're still struggling. A lot of them still have, I mean, for lack of a better term, you know, post-traumatic stress from everything, because now not only do they realize that it already, you know, they have to deal with the stress of it happening once already, but at the back of their mind, they're thinking, well, it could just as easily happen again. And that's why Kenosha was on edge during the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Because, you know, they were worried that if he was found innocent, as he should have been, as someone who was there, shot in self-defense, they were worried that, you know, leftists were going to burn the town again. Because, you know, now, thankfully, it was a cold night, so the leftists
so
were...
So they were all inside.
I mean, it was Wisconsin right before Thanksgiving. So, I mean, yeah, it was to be expected. So, thankfully, you know, the cold weather spared them. But that's why it's so maddening when... I mean, Paul Krugman, just this past weekend, again, he was saying... He was downplaying the riots. Say, like, oh, it's one of the, you know, the biggest myths in the United States that, you know, whole cities were burned down, or you know, he was saying that was overhyped. And it's just, you know, Paul, you know, Krugman over here, he didn't have to deal with any of that. He didn't have to clean up the mess that was left behind. So that myth on the left is still pervasive today. And, you know, I just wanted to
And they use it. And I think that's where, you know, talking about the idea of lawlessness, they said, okay, let's defund the police. Let's stop cash bail. You know, let's let out all these people who definitely belong in jail. Now, I don't want people in prison, but I don't want criminals on the streets a lot more. And I think between the two, the people have a right to say, keep the criminals away, you know, from the rest of us, and then let's deal with the underlying problems.
Yeah, and I think because, you know, for especially for people on left, especially in the aftermath of 2020, they view it as we can only do one. Mm-hmm. You know, like we have to defund the police so that therefore we can fund all these services. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe with when it comes to like having mental health professionals also be on calls, I think, you know, that could also be in tandem with police officers.
Exactly.
Because unfortunately, you know, some people, yeah, they might be having a mental health crisis. There was a recent case in Minneapolis not too long ago where you know, this guy appeared to be having a mental health crisis, but he was shooting through the apartment walls. He terrorized this mother and her kids, And so police, you know, unfortunately had to take him out after a 6-hour standoff because he was getting ready to shoot again.
Yeah,
so
that's what we pay him for. Well, let's talk. We're going to take a break. We're talking with Julio Rosas and his book, Fiery But Mostly Peaceful, The 2020 Riots and the Gaslighting of America, is just spot on with the problem we have right now. So after the break, we will talk some more about lawlessness in America. It's Jim Hansen. We're doing America First.
On behalf of the Nugent family and all working hard, playing hard American families in the asset column, thank you for driving home truth, logic, and common sense every day. We are with you.
America First. Magnificent.
Sweaty Uncle Teddy said it best. Hey, it's Jim Hansen sitting in for Dr. G, and we're going to continue our conversation with Julio Rosas, former not ex, still essentially a U.S. Marine or something, because whatever, they're testy about that. And senior writer for townhall.com, but it's his book, Fiery But Mostly Peaceful, The 2000 Riots and the Gaslighting of America, that I think illuminates perfectly the problem we have. Now, you also, in addition to being a riot connoisseur, an aficionado, like to go down to our very peaceful and only occasionally fiery border and look at the issues down there. And I got to admit, I think one of my favorite things recently was Mayor Bowser of D.C. whining that she needs the National Guard, who she wouldn't call out to protect the Capitol. But she needs them because now Governor Abbott and Governor Ducey from Arizona are shipping her some of their aliens. And I think that is one of the most comical things. And all she's got to do, walk down and knock on the White House door and say, hey, Joe, why don't you fix this?
I mean, that is such like a good example, because I mean they love to talk about, I mean, Mayor Bowser herself has said many times, especially during the Trump administration, they were a sanctuary city, everyone's welcome, all this, you know, nice things. But then when reality hits, it's like, whoa, hey, I didn't mean it like that. I mean,
not
in my city.
Right.
That is a prime example, and of course it's a tiny fraction of what these border towns that I've been to many times, from Yuma, Arizona, all the way down to McAllen, Texas, that have had to deal with it. My favorite example of just how ridiculous the situation had gotten was during the Delta wave of COVID last year. So in the Rio Grande Valley, one of the hardest, the city of McAllen and a bunch of other smaller localities, they had to band their resources together in the county because they had to set up their own city, you know, county level a COVID positive shelter, which was outside in a park, by the way, because there was no place to put them. These migrants that were testing positive, I mean, that's how many were testing positive, because Border Patrol couldn't keep them. Their places were constantly overrun, you know, Catholic Charities, well, which is the main one down there. They didn't have any room for them either. So literally, if it wasn't for the cities pulling their resources together, there'd be COVID positive migrants just all over the place. And I mean, even still with that, there's still a lot of COVID positive migrants traveling throughout the country. And this was happening at the same time when they were debating, like, oh, do we want a vaccine mandate for air flights?
Yeah, shut down, lock down, destroy American business, you know, ruin several years of childhood education, destroy how many small businesses for people all over the country, you know, and force people out of the military for not taking the vaccine. But I don't care. You know, as long as you're coming illegally across the border, bring it on. What an absurd concept.
Yeah, and it's just typical of the Biden administration, where it's just like, look, we either are in a pandemic or we're not. And you can't have it both ways, where you're going to want to treat American citizens, your own people that pay taxes, differently than the people who the very first act is to break the law. The border has been an issue for a very long time, right? That's nothing new.
Our open border.
But the Biden administration just seems to be, you know, their typical response to anything. I mean, take any issue is just, well, we're going to make it 10 times worse on purpose. I mean, seriously. But then the joke that I kind of like to say is like, well, maybe Biden's trying to solve the border crisis by making America so worse that people stop coming.
Can you imagine that? But I wish you weren't joking. The idea that everyone on earth really does want to come here, yeah, and they turn it so bad. Oh, we fixed immigration because America now is a crap hole.
Right. But we're not in a recession. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So it's the same exact thing with what I saw during the riots, where it was an abdication of authority. And that's, mm-hmm, basically kind of what we're seeing now at the border. I mean, and like same problem with big cities in terms of law enforcement retention. Border Patrol, same problem. Like they have super low morale. They're having fewer people sign up. So then, therefore, a lot of these agents they're overstressed, they're overtaxed. There's been from anecdotes that I've been hearing from my sources within Border Patrol, there's been an increase in suicides, which is something that hasn't really been covered a whole lot. I mean, and even when I was in Chicago during the 4th of July, there was a suicide and there was an officer shot just in literally a 2-day period. And in July alone, there's in the Chicago Police Department, there's at least 3 suicides.
And that's the result of having policies where we no longer enforce our own laws because we don't like the outcome. And I'm sorry, the citizens and taxpayers of America did to have our laws enforced by the people who do it. And those people need our support, not our derision for doing their jobs when the vast majority of them are quality people doing the hardest things there are. We have been talking with Julio Rosas, U.S. Marine, senior writer for townhall.com, author of Fiery But Mostly Peaceful, The 2020 Riots and the Gaslighting of America. Check it out because he's far too correct. And that's a lot of stuff we got to fix. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Seb doing America First Radio. We'll be back after the break.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.